If you can just take time to quickly introduce your team as fast as you can and indicate to us how much time do you need so that you can be able to reuse your time, but also members would want to have some time to reflect on other issues. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. My name is Toby Lamadi. I'm the Director General of the Department of Labour. I'm with the entities of the Department of Labour, the Compensation Fund and the Unemployment Insurance Fund. Right, the person who assumingly will be co-chairing with the Chairperson, because once you sit at the corner, you sit at that place, the assumption that you're chairing, there's possibility of conversation. That's the COO of the department, Mr. Shadrack Mkhonto. Next to him is the DDG Corporate Services, Ms. Pelele Tengeni. Next to her is Mr. Deborah Tijane. He is the head of the department in the province. And next to him is Mr. Vioma Fata, who is the Commissioner of the Compensation Fund. And next to her is Ms. Agnes Moilwa. She is the DDG responsible for inspection and enforcement services. And next to her is Mr. Bua Garuwe, who is the Unemployment Insurance Fund Commissioner. And next to me is Ms. Feza Kapuze. She is the CFO of the Unemployment Insurance Fund. This is Ms. Sandy Siwagaba. She's in my office, and the advocate in Reggie, who is also the head of my office. Mr. David Kahl, sitting right at the back, he is the acting chief financial officer of the Department of Labor. And Ms. Nolkolo Sigaba, she's the chief director of monitoring and evaluation. I'm trying to. Ms. Hilda Mkhlomo, the Chief Director of Corporate Services at the Unemployment Insurance Fund. Mr. Pascal Netlati, he is the acting head of the department in Limpopo. Mr. Becky Gama, he is the head of the department in the Eastern Cape. Mr. Kelly Fick, he is the head of the department in Gauteng. Mr. Sam Murotoba is the DDG responsible for public employment services. Mr. Mara Nyobo is our chief information officer. That's the team, Chairperson. And given the fact that we have time pressure, Chairperson, my presentation will last for 40 minutes. I'll try and do it faster without necessarily leaving out any important issues. I would like us to start the presentation at slide 8. The rest of the information is the information that we presented to the committee before. Just to indicate the programs that we have in the department, we have the administration of inspection enforcement services, we have public employment services, we have unemployment insurance fund, we have a compensation fund, and UIF, which are you 38 entities linked to the department. We also have other entities that are not here today, which is the CCMA, the Commission for Conflict and Mediation and Arbitration, National Economic Development and Labour Council, NEDLAC, Productivity South Africa, Protected Employment Enterprises, which is currently treating as sheltered employment factors. These are the outcomes that we're responsible for, outcomes 4 to outcomes 14, so it's outcomes 4, outcomes 5, outcomes 11, outcomes 12, outcomes 13, and outcomes 14. This is how our delivery, service delivery outcomes. And the Department of Labor strategic goals, this is how they are outlined as indicated earlier on, that outcomes 4, outcomes 5, what we've indicated here are both a goal statement for each outcome. I'm not going to go through that, Chairperson, if the Chairperson allows. And again, this slide indicates the whole statement linked to his this is the Department of Labor, Department of Labor Service Delivery Agreement in terms of the medium term strategic framework of outcomes and the key activities and targets. For outcomes 4, which is defend employment to inclusive economic growth, contribute to sub outcome 7, which is to reduce workplace conflict and improve collaboration between government, organized business, and organized labor. We have to develop programs to address workplace conflict and ensure a stronger labor relations system. The measurable indicators are there, are that the measurable improvements in social partners and workplace relations. 2019, the target for the is to implement the process in 3 sectors and 10 workplaces. And 2014-15, this is our baseline. The report of progress on agreed initiatives, process piloted, progress and implementation of all elements of presidential package relating to platinum belt. The second one is strengthen implementation of existing labor relations to improve the protection of vulnerable workers and create different work environment. Increase the number of inspections and follow-ups as the indicator. We accept that the 30% of that would have been achieved by each year. So which means that in 2013, we expect that 30% of that would have been achieved. So which means that 70% of that work would have been done in 2017-18, leading up to 2019. Set standards to reduce inequality in pay and minimum wages will be set for all vulnerable workers. The indicators are that income differentials and pay assessed promote the principle of equal pay for work of equal value. We need to, in 2019, we should have done 150 income differentials assessed. Gaps in minimum wage determination coverage, we have to make sure that by 2019 at least 95% of the designated employers that submit employment equity plans and report to us, 95% of them should have accepted in terms of establishing the gaps in minimum wages. Strategies for extending minimum wage nationally submitted to cabinet by the Department of Labor, DTI, Department of Department of Agriculture, Fisheries, and EDD. Strengthen collective bargaining structures and dispute settlement mechanisms. They indicate that, say, the share of unprotected strikes and total strike action. We want to make sure that by 2019, there's 50% decrease in the number of unprotected strikes. Our goal is to eliminate unprotected strikes. The strategy is to improve collective bargaining that will then be submitted to cabinet. We want to improve in terms of outcomes 13, inclusive and responsible and responsive social protection system. We want to improve the IF payment system. We also want to improve access to social security, including social assistance. This is the work that covers both unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund. In terms of outcomes 14, the nation building social cohesion, and we want to improve enforcement of the Employment Equity Act. As indicated earlier on Shepherdin, these are the programs of the department. I'm not going to go through that. I'm going to just indicate what administration is going to be doing in the 2016-17 financial year in terms of the APP. What we want to do is to improve the department's management practices and practice support based on the management performance assessment criteria we call MBET, which is reflects the level of total department MPET standards at level 3 and 4. The target is that 55% of the total department's MPET standards at level 3 and 4 by March 2017. In quarter 1, we want to implement 50% of that. We want to achieve 50% of that. In quarter 2, the MPET self-assessment report must be signed off by the DG and submitted to the DME by 3 September 2016. In quarter 3, we want to develop and sign off the MPET action plan by EPSCO to address challenges raised in MPET 1.6. in quarter 4, 55% of the total department standards. Level 3 and 4 by March 70 based on the final EPEP report. 2.2% of vacancy due by 31st March 2017. We want to make sure that our target is actually 9.9. Quarter 1, we want to make sure that we reduce it by 12%, in quarter 2 by 11%, in quarter 3, we want to achieve the 9.9%, and quarter 4. Number of annual financial statements and interim financial statements compiled the year that comply with guidelines issued by the National Treasury. We want to make sure that on the 1st of May, the IFS is submitted within 30 days after each quarter, and progressively quarter 1 by 31st of May, quarter 2 by 31st of July, quarter 3 by 31st of October, and quarter 4 by 31st of January. The one relating to payment of the service providers, we want to make sure that we pay within 30 days of receipt. You can see that we want to make sure that 100% of that is complied with from quarter 1 up until quarter 4. Specific reporting of detected irregular and fruitless wasteful and unauthorized expenditure, we also want to make sure that 100% of that is achieved. When it comes to inspection and enforcement services, we want to make sure that the number of designated employers reviewed in terms of employment equity, they comply with employment equity legislation. We set target of 188, broken down into those four quarters, 202, 242, 242. The percentage of non-compliant employers, those reviewed in reference to 1.1 issued with a recommendation within 90 days of review. We want to make sure that all employers that we have put through a what you call a easy review system, they have all received recommendations. The number of designated employers inspected for years, the SMI compliance to employment equity legislation. This is what is referred to as procedural employment equity inspections. We have put aside a target of 4,729. Broken down into the four quarters of the year. And again, in terms of 1.4, we want to make sure that all those employers that we have instructed, they comply with employment equity, and they're also issued with the respective notices that we issue, or instruments that we use as a department to force employers to comply. The number of workplaces inspected per year to determine compliance with labor legislation. These are the normal inspections other than employment equity. Employment equity is dealt with differently because it has to do with the transformation of the labor market. So your normal day-to-day inspections will go to companies to check compliance with either basic control of employment, unemployment insurance fund, and other pieces of legislation. That's the work that I'm referring to under 2.1. We have set a target of 134,958,000 workplaces that will be visited, broken down into four quarters. And again, we want to make sure that when we visited these workplaces, inspected them, they are issued with the notices or instruments that we use to make sure that they comply. One of the things that we do as a department under 2.3 is not only to inspect but to educate both employers and employees. To that effect, we set a target of four upgrade sessions that we'll be doing, broken down, of course, into one per quarter. Under 2.4, the percentage of inspection on request or work permits conducted within 5 days. This is the work that we do in collaboration with the Department of Home Affairs. As and when we get requests, we go to companies and inspect them to ensure that they comply with the laws, and then we make recommendations to the Department of Home Affairs. And again, want to make sure that those companies that we have inspected, they comply with the law. 3.1, number of workplaces inspected per year to determine the compliance with occupational health and safety legislation. We set a target of 21,967.
broken down into the different, into the your four quarters of the year. And 3.2 is a percentage of non-compliant workplaces inspected with reference to 3.1, dealt with in terms of the OSH legislation. 3.3 is a percentage of reported incidents investigated within 90 calendar days. Here we've set a 62%, and the reason for us setting that 62% is because it takes quite some time to investigate these incidents. If it's a minor incident, it's much easier, but if it's a it's a difficult one which will require us to have what we call Section 32 inquiry, it will then, it takes a year or two in some instances, given the complexity of the matter. Percentage of applications for registration of entities processed within 50 calendar days is set a target of 80%. And the members would have noted that in terms of the targets that we set for occupational health and safety, you would have noticed a decrease in the target. This is a result of a the resources that we have available in the department. What we try to do is to, you know, is to try and be as realistic as possible in the setting of the targets, so that we don't set targets that we know very well are not going to be achievable. And of course, given the fact that, and you'll see when you present the budget of the department, we're also reflecting on the budget cuts that have been accepted in the budget of budget allocation of the department. We're in the process of amending the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and we want to make sure that this bill comes to cabinet in this financial year. We'll finalize the process. We're finalizing the process at NEDLAC. We will be presenting the bill at the economy cluster very soon, and it will then find its way to Parliament for processing. We also want to go to companies and expect them to want to look at their payrolls just to make sure that they comply with the UIE and to see that they contribute to unemployment insurance fund. Those are the, that's the target that we set, and we've broken it down in terms of the different quarters. Public employment services, we want to register number of regulations and policies in terms of the Employment Services Act tables for the Employment Services Board a year. Four regulations tabled to the Employment Services Board by March 2017 relating to relating to one, the registration of officers in terms of Section 52, tabled to the Employment Services Board. That's what we want to do in quarter one. In quarter two, regulation on private employment agencies, temporary employment services, Section 13 and 52, table to the Employment Services Board. Quarter 3, regulation on the procedure for employment of foreign nationals, Section 52, tables to the EF Board. Regulation on provision of employment services by persons outside of the public administration, Section 52, tables to the Employment Services Board. The number of public employment services advocacy campaigns conducted per year with set a target of 251, broken down into the year four quarters. The number of work seekers registered on F on employment services system per year, we want to capture 500,000 people on our system. We've broken that down in terms of quarter one. This is a program that we use to register work seekers. What work seekers do, they come to the Department of Labor, we register them on the system. Once job opportunities are loaded on the system does what is called magic, and therefore we're in a position to refer work seekers to prospective employers. And of course, we also have a vocational counseling. What we do is we prepare them for the interviews. Once they have been matched, we work with them, prepare them for the interview, so that by the time they meet the prospective employers, they are ready for the interviews. the number of work seekers provided with employment counseling per year. This is a point that I was raising now. Given the capacity that we have and the resources that we have, we draw from the database and people and we put them through the employment counseling services that we render. The number of registered employment opportunities filled by registered work seekers, we want to make sure that at least just about 8,000. We know it's not a substantial number given the high levels of unemployment that that we have in the country. But this depends on the number of opportunities that are registered on the system. When employers come to the department and register opportunities, we're able to place employees with work. Number of work opportunities registered for SL per year, even though this is dependent on the goodwill of the employers, we've decided that we need to push and make sure that at least 50,000 of job opportunities are recorded and are captured on the employment services system, broken down into different. The percentage of applications for private employment agencies and temporary, I think I've also spoken about this. We want to make sure that 100% complete private employment agencies and temporary employment agents application are processed within 60 days. We want to make sure that it's 100%. 2.1, the percentage of applications for foreign nationals, corporate and individual work visa processes within 30 working days. 70% complete application for foreign nationals, corporate and individual work visa processed within 30 working days. This is one of the important work that we do in collaboration with Home Affairs. And in some instances, our work here is largely affected by the incomplete applications that we receive, and therefore it drags the process to more than 30 days. But ideally, this is the standard that we set for ourselves. Labor policy. The number of policy instruments developed and promoted to enhance the implementation of the Employment Equity Act by 31st of March. We want to amend the Code of Good Practice on preparation and implementation of employment equity plans. In quarter two, we will do the draft amendment, and in quarter three, we consolidate public comments and develop financial code of practice. In quarter four, we'll then have the amended code of good practice, which has been developed. Conduct 13 workshops on amended code of good practice on employment of persons with disabilities by 30 September 2013. And in quarter two, we want to conduct those 13 workshops. That's the target that we set for ourselves there. And 2015-16 annual employment equity report and public register published by 30 June 2016. We want to make sure that by the first quarter, that is done. 2016-2017 annual employment equity report and public register developed in March 31st. By 31st March 2017, this is the work that we'll do in quarter four. The number of sectoral determinations reviewed per year. In this financial year, we want to review hospitality and taxes sectoral determination by March 2017. And this is the work that will start in quarter one and leading to the promulgation of those sectoral determinations by June 2016. Strengthen and monitor implementation of bilateral agreements that are in line with national priorities. Since that time frame, we've signed bilateral agreements with Lesotho, Namibia, Algeria, Mozambique, Brazil, Cuba, Germany, and China. We want to make sure that by quarter two, the midterm implementation report is submitted by the 31st of September 2013, and on the 30th of March, we can submit the annual implementation plan. The percentage of collective agreements attended within 9 calendar days. We want to make sure that 100% of that, as and when we receive a request for the minister to extend the collective agreements, we want to make sure that that is on time. The percentage of labor organization applications for registration approved or refused within 90 days. And again, that we want, as and when we receive applications, we want to process them and make sure that we don't have a backlog. Number of labor market trends report produced annually. We want to produce 4 reports, 2 annual statistical trend reports compiled and submitted by June 2016. These include annual labor market bulletin and job opportunity and unemployment in the SA labor market. by 2016. For annual statistical trend reports approved and published by September 2016, these include annual labor market bulletin, job opportunity and unemployment in the SA labor market, industrial action report, and an annual administrative statistics report of 2015-16. Quarter 4, 2 annual statistical trend reports compiled and submitted by March 2017. These include annual administrative statistics report 2015 and industrial action report of 2015. Number of labor market research reports reduced annually to 4, in line with our research agenda. These are the provincial targets allocated to each province. You can see that, for instance, Eastern Cape, they have to do 130 in terms of deployment equity, risk state 30, Hotel 207. The allocation of targets is done in terms of the resource that each province has. So the bigger the province, the more work that province would do. I think that's in terms of all what I've had shared with you. I'm not going to go down the indicator. When it comes to public employment services, those are the targets that we've taken down in terms of the different provinces. This is our budget and the medium-term expenditure framework. For this year, we've been allocated as a department at 2.847. As a budget for the department, that is broken down into your compensation of employees. You can see that for 2015-16, our baseline was 2.9, and for 2016, it's 2.8. And that's the reduction that I was referring to. This is how the budget is broken down. For administration, we've allocated 852 million. Inspection Enforcement Services, 519. Public Employment Services, 510. Labor Policy and Industrial Relations, 965. And that adds up to the total budget of 2.8. If you go to the economic classification on current payments, which include compensation of employees and goods and services, they add up to 1.7, as you can see the breakdown there. And if you look at the transfer of payments, it's just 1 billion, and the capital asset is 8 million, and that again adds up to 2.847. And the honorable share member, you can see that in 2017-18, there's an increase in the budget in the baseline from 2.87 to 3.32. And also in 2018 and 19, there's an increase from 3.32 to 3.22. This is what we're showing here is the change that has been made for our 2015 E&E baseline. You can see that the administration budget dropped by just 50.9 million. Inspection Enforcement Services dropped by 67.7 million. The Public Employment Services budget dropped by 24.6 million. The Labor Police and Industrial Relations dropped by 6.9 million. And you can see progressively in the coming financial years, the budget continues to drop. Only Labor Police and Industrial Relations, which is expected to get an increase of 30.742, and because of the national minimum wage discussion that we have and the building of a capacity in the department to be able to implement whatever decisions that would have been concluded at that level in relation to that. And again, in terms of the economic classification, under current payments, you can see that we have a reduction of 170 million and broken down in terms of compensation of employees and goods and services. Transfer payments, we have an increase of 22 million, but if you look at capital assets, there's a decrease of 3 million. And that adds up to 150 million, which is a total reduction on the Department of Labor budget. If you look at the compensation funds, I'm also not going to go through the other strategic issues that they've raised. I'm going to go straight to the what they've indicated that they are going to do in this financial year. The fund, it provides under administration, it provides risk management services, and the strategic objective there is to provide professionalism and intent-oriented support service. The fund risk management maturity must be improved to a level by 31st March 2017. The first order target one tested business continued to program strategy by 30 June 2016. In second quarter, we want to review that the strategic risk register by 30 September 2016. In quarter three, review six operational risk registers. In quarter four, six risk monitoring reports should have been generated by 31st March 2017. An annual risk-based internal audit plan approved by 31st March. That's the annual target. We're hoping that we will work through this up until the end of the fourth quarter, which will result in the last risk-based internal audit plan approved. Percentage of projects on risk-based audit plan executed annually by 31st March 2017. We have broken down that target in terms of percentages. You can see quarter one is 15%, quarter two is 45%, and quarter three 60%. In total, we want to make sure that we achieve 7% of that target. Provide percentage of active registered employers assessed annually by 31st March 2017. We want to make sure that 50% of active registered employers are assessed annually, 40% in the first quarter, 75% in the second quarter, 85% in the third quarter, 100% in the fourth quarter. That's 100% or 6%. Percentage annual increase on investment income by 31st March of the current financial year compared to the previous financial year. We want to make sure that our investment grows at a rate of CPI plus 2% annually. This is an agreement that we have with the public corporation investment, public investment corporation, sorry. That's the target that we have, the money that we invested with them. Number of findings affecting the AG audit report as of 31st March 2015 cleared annually by 31st March 2017. 78 findings affecting the annual audit report. We want to make sure that by the first quarter, 90 findings are cleared by 30 June 2016, 19 by the second quarter, 19 third quarter, and on the fourth quarter, I want to make sure that 21 of those that would have been left are cleared. Percentage of findings affecting the audit record as of 31st March 2015 cleared annually by 31st March. We want to make sure that 40% of the findings are dealt with. In quarter two, we want to make sure that 25% of that, and same as quarter three, and then 50% by quarter four. Percentage of vacancies at compensation fund maintained annually. We have a target of 10%. Actually, this should have been 9.9. Should have been, it was just a rounding off. 9.9 is equivalent to 10 if you round it off. So it should be 9.9. And that's the percentage per quarter. We want to maintain that. Percentage of authorized claims date within 5 working days. That's what we want to achieve progressively from quarter one to quarter three. We are known for not paying claims on time, and that's what we want to make sure that we improve in this area. We want to make sure that if you've lost a claim with a compensation fund, that claim is processed timely. Reviewed compensation benefits for annual adjustments, annual review and approval of compensation benefits adjustment by March 2017. We want to make sure that third quarter we review, do a preliminary review, and this is the work that is done by our programs, and that work will be done by the 30th of June 2016, and the final compensation benefit submission table for approval by the compensation board, and the first quarter submission to the minister and the publishing of the approved compensation benefit in the government gazette by 31st March 2017. Review medical tariffs for annual adjustments. We want to make sure that the annual review and approval of medical tariffs for annual adjustment by March 2017. The first quarter will be the preliminary report for the actuarials, and the second quarter will be consultation with medical stakeholders by 30th of September. Third quarter, final medical tariffs table for approval by the compensation board, and publishing in the government gazette by the last quarter, which is quarter four. Annual improvement administration of chronic medication distribution. Chronic medication distribution program to beneficiaries implemented by March 2017. The first quarter source distributor for chronic medication by 30 September. This is a work that is already been, has already commenced. Second quarter implement phase one pilot provinces of the distribution of the chronic medication by 31st December 2016. Implement phase two in the third quarter, and the fourth quarter one progress report on the project implementation by the 31st of March. Annual improvement in the management of litigation cases, hearings, and objections. This is one area that requires us to develop an electronic case management system as the process that we'll be implementing from first, second quarter to the fourth quarter. Percentage of registered claims adjudicated in the current financial year, we set ourselves a percentage of 85% of claims to be adjudicated in the financial year, and we've broken down in terms of what we want to do first quarter to the last quarter. Percentage of approved medical invoices for payments in the current year, we also want to make sure that at least 85% of those invoices are paid, and as we've done the we've broken them down in terms of the quarter. Percentage of medical claims finalized within 60 working days, and again, if we want to improve the relationship that we have with all the medical service providers, hospitals, we have to make sure that within 60 days we project the claims. This is the budget of the compensation fund. The total budget of just over 5 billion, and in terms of their programs, Program 1, they will be spending 985 million. Program 2, which is operations management, they will spend 4.1. And Program 3, which is provincial operations, they will be spending 652 million. This is how the budget is broken down in terms of the economy classification. Current payments that include compensation employees and goods and services amounts to just 1 billion, over 1 billion, and transfer payments just over 4 billion, and capital assets 12, and that adds up to your 5.1 billion. Compensation of employees, that's what we spoke about in terms of what's important is the compensation benefits. So in this financial year, we'll be spending just over 4.0185 billion on the compensation benefits. The revenue for assessment, I'm going to leave this slide Jefferson, and move on to other slides because of time. And again, this is how the administrative budget of program is broken down. I want to move to the unemployment insurance fund quickly. This is the work that the unemployment insurance fund will be doing. One, sound financial management. We want to make sure that percentage return on investment. Third one is CPI plus 2.5% return on investment by end of March. This is both on the funds that we invested with PIC, using different methods. Some of them we invested through government bonds, but we want a return on our investment, which is CPI plus 2.5. Social responsible investment, percentage of total mandated social responsible investment committed, 80% by March 2017, and we've broken them down in terms of the different financial years. percentage of claims, valid claims with complete information approved or accepted as per the Bank Operational System, CIA, we want to make sure that 90% within 5 weeks have processed and we've broken the down in terms of the different years. Increasing the number of newly registered employers per year, we want to make sure that by the end of March 2017, we increase our database by 55,000 because we know that the employers there out there who are not registered with the unemployment insurance fund, and that contributes to poverty as and when people lost their employment, they can't claim. Percentage increase in revenue per year, 7.5% by March 2017. We want to increase our revenue by 7.5%. And we can do so if we increase the number of newly registered employers, make sure that every employer contributes. Percentage reduction in overpayments balance. This is one area that is a challenge for the fund because even when people find employment, they don't, sometimes the companies don't declare on time, we continue paying them UIF benefits, and then we discover later on that they are drawing both the UIF and over earning the salary. So that's what this relates to. Percentage of budget funds transferred for general solutions implementation by Productive South Africa per year. We support our sister agent, which is called Productivity South Africa. They provide turnaround solutions to companies that are in distress. We want to make sure that at least we transfer 80% of the funds to them. Turnaround times to transfer funds to FIT after the approval of the training layoff. We want to improve the turnaround times to 30 days, depending on whether we get the invoices on time. We want to make sure that we transfer funds to the applicants or training companies. These are the indicators per the quarter. I think we've already spoken about this. This is how we've broken down in terms of the different quarters. And also the slide 8 also reflects what I've indicated, for instance, the number of claims submitted through your filing claims portal per year. We want to improve it by 20,000, and we've broken that down in terms of the different quarters, June, September, December, March. Increasing the number of newly registered employers, we've spoken about that. We've broken it down into different quarters. The percentage increase in revenue per year, we've spoken about it. We're hoping that we'll realize that these are we've broken also down in terms of the different quarters, depending on how the economy responds. Increasing the number of employers using new filing systems a year. We want to encourage this because the less people come to our offices, the better, because it means that they can do these things sitting at the comfort of their homes, and we have provided the technology for that. Percentage of budgeted funds transferred, what I've spoken about this, and broken down into process. I've spoken about that as well. And this is the budget for unemployment insurance fund. The total budget is 2.253 billion, broken down into different strategic objectives and in terms of the different programs that they are running, administration, business, and labor activation program, the strategic objective fund, fund COVID alleviation schemes, and that adds up to 2.253. The total benefits that the fund wants to spend money on is about 7.9 billion. We want to spend 7.9 billion on total benefits. Unemployment 6.1 billion, illness benefits, transparency, maternity benefits 1 billion, adoption as 1044, dependence 418, and that adds up to 7.949 billion. We've spoken about a program called the Labor Activation Program, Training Layoff Scheme. this is what you want to spend for 2016-17. We run a program called Labor Activation Program. And so when we ask questions, the commissioner will dwell more on what the program does. The training level scheme and social plan funding, which have to do with what I've indicated earlier when the companies are in distress. We assist companies in taking a portion of their salaries so that they can redirect some of the funds that are going to be used for payment of wages and salaries, redirected to make sure that the business is turned around. So we assist with the, we don't call it a salary or wages, we call it some sort of a stipend. Because during that time, employees are put through a training program, a skills program. The time of the unemployed is set aside for 2016-17, 500 million. Unemployment allocation schemes, just 1.4 billion. Just to take you through, Sheraton, quickly, the 10 layoff scheme and job creation, and impact on job creation. The focus on the fund focuses on the following: provision of turnaround solutions, training layoff schemes, and the impact is that we were able to save jobs, and certainly improvement of efficiency and productivity in companies. Thirdly, poverty reduction. We're in partnership with PIB and IGC. Private initiatives that are listed here, for instance, developmental responsibility investment mandate, social responsibility investment, investment portfolio, different investment instruments, diversified asset allocation in domestic markets. The impact is that we create and retain maximum number of sustainable jobs across industrial sectors and all provinces. Job creation initiatives, as of 09 November 2016, the number of deals are 258 and the value is 3.9 billion and job created 33,000 and job saved is 20.1 thousand. As March 2017, it was 257, 3.7, 3669, and 3.8 billion. And lastly, Chair, job layoff scheme impact, poverty alleviation scheme, focusing on the following: training in partnership with CITAC, institutional higher learning, state-owned entities, and private sector, enterprise development program in partnership with development, financial institutions, private sector. Impact is the upskilling of unemployed by health beneficiaries so that they can get better chances of being re-employed. Contribution to critical and scarce skills, alleviating poverty, through stipends while on training, improving access to bursaries by referring beneficiaries to government educational institutions funded by UIF, linking skilled entrepreneurs to markets, and linking skilled entrepreneurs to development and financial institutions. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Members are ready to throw questions at you. I want to assume that you and your team you would be noting them down so that you can be able to respond. Honorable member, can I note hands for questions? Honorable Lord, Honorable Faba, Honorable Timonya, Makoshi. We have four hands for now, Gigi. We are going to start with Honorable Lord from the Western Cape, Honorable Faba from the Northern Cape, Honorable Mtimunya from Kumalanga, and Honorable Makoshi here for DG. We are all her subjects here. She's responsible for all of us. She's having an extra constituency, the royal family from the Pope. Honorable Lord, if you are ready, my Lord.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is not really on the budget to start off now with. I really want to find out, and maybe you can assist us, but since we started as a Secretary Committee in 2014, how often has the Minister actually attended this meeting? Because it's her department. And it's obvious, well, we've got a full house here, but the people that need to take the political responsibility to actually come and report is not here. And every single time there's another excuse. And Chairperson, I'm going to leave it in your hands, but it's also not just disrespecting one or two individuals, it's disrespecting the entire NGOP and the select committee that we're sitting here.
Chairperson, luckily I won't be attending the International Labour Organization in Geneva, and we've got more important things to run, like elections, to get things right. But maybe if you go there, you will meet the minister there, because that's usually where you see them. They don't come here for some reason. I don't know if they're scared of us. But to all you officials coming here, thank you very much. I also would like to pose a question, Chairperson. We already spoke in committees previously that we've got video conferencing facilities. Now, if I look at the department sitting in front of us here, I don't want to even ask what the cost would be for having all the officials coming here to speak to us. There was one presentation, and surely I don't understand why all the delegates of the department must be here. So this to me remains a cost factor that Parliament said they wanted to sort out. So, Chairperson, please, if we can, this time now that you, the chairperson of this committee, take off, and that we look at the video conferencing facilities. I do believe that the department do have such facilities available, and we do have. There was a lot of money spent on that. Chairperson, coming to the presentation, I want to go to page 43. As we only have two pages that's actually talking to provinces. Now we are the National Council of Provinces. Now this is the whole national budget, almost 60 pages plus. Now to me from Northern Cape, it's important to note certain things. And when I'm saying certain things, I want to know, for instance, number of designated employees reviewed per year and then inspected per year. Why 46, why 85? You review and inspect, don't they do them at the same time? This is one of the questions I would like to know. Then if I look in the Northern Cape again, 3.1, number of workplaces inspected per year to determine the compliances with occupational safety, 7.2, I understand that part. Now, I'm coming to the next question. On the last two sections, 1.5 and 1.6, number of registered opportunities sold. Registered work seekers per year. Now this is number of opportunities filled, which is 400. Now what concerns me is number of work opportunities registered. Now if there's 3,000, I'm just looking at the Northern Cape as I said before, there's 3,000 registered work opportunities. How come only 400 is being filled? If I read this correctly, are we on the same page? But you understand my question. I need to understand, if there is 3,000 jobs that are registered, why when we have a number of registered work seekers of 9,000, and actually we want 10,000 on the work seeker registration, we only get 400 of these 10,000 people work. Now somebody, something must be wrong. This can't be right. So I need to understand how they work on that. And then also, over the past 3 years, there was 2.3 billion that's being spent, which is almost the whole budget of the department, on investigating and monitoring, and this is on determining the minimum wage structure. I would like to know from the department, how come so much money is spent on the investigation on the minimum wage? This is totally unacceptable, Chairperson. I mean, I need to understand this. Maybe I'm not so much into the finances part, but I don't even think if I start counting now, I can get you 2.3 billion. And to spend that amount of money just on the introduction of the national minimum wage to determine its impact on the wage structure, as I say, this just doesn't make sense to me. If I can get a clear answer and not a political answer, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, your pardon, I do not have the statistics for me. But the information I have is that the labour market remains stubbornly white men dominated. I know you have no jurisdiction in the courtrooms, but in the in the core operations of big industry in this country remains white male dominated, and I miss that ambition on the part of you on part of your strategy and your annual plan as to how do you aim to address this thing and reverse this kind of unfair domination. And I want to believe you agree with me, it is unfair. It's an unfair domination. It was slide 24, DG. If someone can talk to that, I really don't understand what it means, why it refers to percentage of non-compliant employers of those reviewed in reference to 1.1 issued with the recommendations in 90 days of a review, 100%, 90%. I don't understand that. Okay, you can unpack that. My last question, you take a Heifel deal, I'm sure you know Heifel deal went down, and you will agree with me that the local economy of Anakleno with Bank in Mwananga picking banks on mostly on mining industry and Heifel deal in the main for years now. I'm not sure if you are making any intervention in respect of that the high number of workers that they are being laid off via your poverty alleviation schemes. The same question goes with the individual mine workers in poverty. Thanks, George. My question.
Ke bona ebile go fisa ba Mpumalanga thank you very much for the presentation. I want to read an honorable round chapter. I don't know because I was lost this morning. I think it's age is certainly dealing much with me. So I just want to check if ever we did get an apology from the minister, because I don't remember not even in the see the minister in this committee, and we really want to see the minister. Honorable Saba covered me partly on the issues of the provinces. We cannot run away from our province because they are the ones who send us here. Let me say it is good that we need to create income to our local people, because this will end up producing unemployment. I want to talk to slide number 3, where they are talking providing active labor market programs. I think this is a good purpose. My question is, how do they then monitor whoever the teachers are then doing the good thing with the money? And if ever they are really checking whether the monies are going into the hands, if indeed what they give the sitters and their heads, they're going to also help the productivity of South Africa. We need to know if ever this money will then do the necessary job. If you're not going to do that, I think it's better directed some way to end up helping our people. And the other question, Jefferson, years back, the audit outcome of the department was not good. I just want to check as to whether there's an improvement. Thank you.
This is the first part, DG and your team, of the questions that are still going to come back. Please leave the question. I think the argument of Honorable Lont was directed to me, and the first part of what Honorable Father said, including what Honorable Makoshi said about the participation of the political leadership in this. I think I'll come back to that. Answer all other questions to then directed to the team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members. Why only 2 pages are dedicated to provincial work? Once we have agreed on the strategic plan of the department and the work that must be done, it then translated into an operational plan which is sent to provinces. So provinces are responsible for their implementing arm of the Department of Labor. So what we tried to do in those two slides is to reflect the work that the provinces would be doing in relation to the stress plan and the annual performance plan of the department. I want to go to the slide 46 that the honorable member referred to. Is that 46? Page 43, sorry. Slide 43. Now, any placement of, firstly, what we want to do is we want to capture the unemployed people on our database so that with the interventions that government have, not only the Department of Labor, across government, municipalities, Department of Higher Education, Agriculture, and all that, so that whenever there are initiatives where they are able to access the unemployed from a database. That's the first thing. So placement may not necessarily be a placement that is done by the Department of Labor. So they may be placed elsewhere. So the second thing is, once you've registered, you need to encourage employers to register job opportunities with the department. Now, you always find, especially in this economic climate that we find ourselves in, your job opportunities will always be less than the people that you have on the database. Now, placement of those people depends on the skills and competences that they have and what the employers are looking for. So that is why when we've registered this much, we put them through the vocational services counseling, prepare them for job opportunities. It may not be those job opportunities that are registered on the system. It may be any other job opportunity that will come. So you will always look, when you look at our report, you will always see that the number of those placed on unemployment is always far lesser than the number that is registered. It has to do with the number of job opportunities that exist and that have been reported to the Department of Labor. But of course, one of the challenges that we have is that those that we refer to other institutions, currently we have no mechanism of tracking them and therefore report that they have been placed. For instance, for the Madupi Hostels project, almost all the people that are working there were sourced from our database. So that's how good the system is. But of course, we're working with other agencies to make sure that we improve the placement. So you'll always have this number of registered, this number of job opportunities that are there, and the number placed. It has to do with what is happening in the economy. Why are we spending 2.4 billion on the national minimum wage? We're not spending 2.4 billion. We clarified this. We said there was an error on the medium term expenditure framework document that was sent out. And we clarified by saying we cannot spend 2.4 billion when the budget of the department is just 2.9. So which means that everything that we have in the department will go towards the investigation of the national minimum wage. So we corrected this. I think after our budget vote last year, the minister had a media briefing where she corrected this perception. And that's why we're reflecting in the 2017-18 baseline that our baseline will increase, for instance, for labor market policy by 13 million to cater for the national minimum wage yielding capacity and the institutional, especially the institutional capacity to make sure that we are able to administer the national minimum wage after the agreement that would have been concluded at MEDLEC. With regards to, well, Chair, the issue of the last delegation, it relates to the fact that this committee deals with
provinces. And we've brought provincial managers here so that whenever you have, if you want to have questions that are directed to a province, that specific manager would then respond. We didn't bring all of them, but we brought a sizable number, and given the nature of the organizational governance structure, each one of them would be able to respond on what is happening in any province. So that's why we brought a large delegation. With regards to the transformation of the labor market and the dominance by white males, when we spoke about I think slide 24 that you asked me to explain, honorable member, in slide 24 we're saying we want to review. We have a system called a Director General Review, where we take companies that are designated employers. We take the reports that we take the employment equity plan, we take the employment equity reports, we review them. So we do a desktop analysis, we then go to the company and say to them, look, in terms of your plan, you were saying you by this time you would have achieved X, Y, and Z in terms of transformation. You would have developed this policy in terms of addressing the reasons why previously disadvantaged people, deaf people, and disabled people are not able to move from the different employment categories and employment levels. If you haven't done that, give us reasons why we have not done so. So what we do is we then come up with recommendations that we present to the CEO of the company. Not present them to another person. If the CEO is not there, we don't come. We will insist that we must present the recommendations to the CEO, because if the CEO has signed the employment equity plan and the employment equity report that was sent to the department, and then we give the recommendations. They then give us an indication as to when they are going to address the issue that are contained in the DGO review report. When they don't do anything, we take them to court for failure to comply. For instance, we've taken a number of companies now to court for a failure to report, and these are not small companies. These are big companies. Some of them are in the media space, but we've taken them to court because they have failed to comply with the basic provision of the law that they must report to the Department of Labor. And we also have, I think I mentioned also that the Labor Market Policy Division is also looking at the income differentials, because that's another area where we find that even people who are doing an equivalent job, there are instances where they earn different salaries. So the new provisions relating to equal pay for work of equal value, we are able to do a proper analysis, look at the income differential, and make recommendations to companies that, look, you need to rectify 1, 2, 3, 4 in order to make sure that people who are doing exactly the same job are earning equivalent salaries. So we've put this on our radar screen. That's why we've made a distinction between the normal inspection and the employment equity, simply because we want to make sure that the issue of the transformation of the labor market is not lost in the work that the department is doing. So slide 24 then says, the percentage of non-compliant employers of those reviewed in reference to 1.1 are issued with a recommendation within 90 days of the review. So once we've and we've picked up that they are not complying with the plans that they've given us, and the report that they've given us is not talking to the plans, we then draw out those recommendations. And the target that we're setting ourselves is that we must do so within 90 days of the review. So these are recommendations are the instruments that are provided for in the law that the inspector can use once they've done the review.
So we want to make sure that it's an important side of the work that we do. So we wanted to capture it so that it doesn't get lost also in the process. With regard to high self-esteem, yes, we heard about that high self-esteem had to close. But it had to close because of matters beyond the Department of Labor. And I know that there were, there were media statements that were made that actually attributing the closure of high self-esteem to the fact that we didn't pay the 10 layer scheme amount to or money to SSD, and that's not true. In fact, I approved an amount of about 84 million for the training layer scheme. And we then said to IFS Steel, we're not going to pay this money, we're not going to give 84 million. We'll pay in tranches of 15 million. So, and the reason for doing that is that initially, when I asked for a due diligence report and the business rescue plan, I was told that those documents are confidential. And then I said, on the basis of your response, I'm not going to approve 84 million. That 84 million is also going to be confidential. Because those documents are documents that inform the head of the department to make a decision to release 84 million. So when it was submitted to me in January, I then approved it. Because I could see that the company could be rescued. One of the things that we looked at is that, will jobs be saved? Because you don't want to throw money in something that will not result in job preservation. So that was the focus. That was the focus for us, that jobs should be saved. So once you were in the process of paying, the media statements alluding to the fact that the company was going down, the shareholders were taking each other to court, and blah, blah, blah. So we then felt like, oh, let's hold on to the 15 million so that we don't get ourselves involved in something that is actually not, is going down. So if the 15 million were paid, it would have been money down the drain. We actually saying to ourselves, it was a good thing that we never paid the 84 million because we wouldn't be getting our money now. The IDC is taking IFS still to court. They want the 150 million back. So it would have been money of workers wasted in this initiative. But we then met with a representative of IFS still and NUMSA. We said to them, look, the workers can still go through the labor activation program that we're running in the department. So that in the meantime, whilst you are telling us that they move to make sure that the company is resuscitated and reopened, in the process, we can even process the UIF claim for these workers so that they at least they get something. And if the company reopens, well, we are on standby to assist the company. So that's our position currently as the Department of Labor and Environment, as self-esteem is concerned. We've been involved in other initiatives where the training layoff scheme has been very successful. The commissioner will respond to the Lilymine matter whether we have received requests to get involved in the Lilymine. But I know that the company is in a business rescue mode as we speak, and even when we are required as a department, we'll get involved. The commissioner will respond in terms of how we monitor sitters and make sure that the money allocated to them does the work that it is meant for. I'm just going to talk about what it outcomes right here in full. I think, just as it over the last three financial years, the department has been receiving unqualified audit fines. Of course, we're aiming to get clean audits. The unqualified audit findings
there were issues that were raised with relating to the performance in, information that was submitted to the AG. It talked to the fact that in some instances we don't have systems that reliable systems to collect data, and therefore calls into question the reliability of that data. But other than that, we have, and even this financial year, we are poised to receive an unqualified audit funding from the AG. Thank you.
Commissioner, can I humbly request that you should speak to the post like it is a strike? Remember that you changed to the follow-ups, and so we want to say good time.
Thank you. I think the Guardian is really mind. They have not come to the U.S. But the process is that it starts at the first floor where they agree with the union that they want to access the hidden data scheme. Thereafter, go to the CCMA. From the CCMA, they will come to us. But it's not a process. As the headquarters, it's a partnership that we work on. We look at the target that they have. For instance, they want to train about 2,000 people. We anticipate to put 4,000 to shoot half of the money, they shoot half of the money. How we monitor that is that before we transfer the money, we look at the deliverable. What is it delivered? And then we then release the payment. The same with the productivity for South Africa. They give us a business plan, give us their target. Now, on achieving those targets, then we release the money. Thank you.
If I was
moving,
would I
win you a fight?
Thank you. Honorable Mokwed, I saw your hand earlier. Can I start with you, Honorable Bauda? Are you having any follow-ups, Honorable Honorable Faba? Are you okay? Oh, okay. Honorable Chibunya will have a follow-up then, Honorable. We are taking the last round, DJ and your team.
Just one follow-up.
On the sister, that was the commissioner was responded to. So, DJ, we are going to have Honorable Rauda from Mpumalanga also, Honorable Makue from the capital city, Gauteng, and then we have Honorable Mutimuni again, and then Honorable Nguita from the Eastern Cape. You would remember that the Eastern Cape have a particular relationship with the Northwest where I come from. It's a labor saving area. So some of the issues might be mentioned there. Sizuk, you would be the last one. Honorable Fa.
Allow me first to greet everybody with Assalamu alaikum. I'm a little bit compromised this morning, the Honorable Chair. The Honorable Makoe gives me a banana to eat. I've enjoyed it, and then he turns on and he tells me, only monkey eat banana. Honorable Chair, Honorable Chair, let me begin with my comfort zone. I heard the mention about chronic medication program. You know, this term chronic medication is actually misleading. Yes, there are chronic illnesses, but these are also dynamic. You know, there has to be monitoring. We cannot roll out a program without having active involvement, and I'm just raising it. I would like you to work on Senegal and then flip the DG. The other issue is that your IT systems within the department give us an idea of to what extent you're using these. Do you plan establishing a very big database which will keep employers' records, a database of employees, and perhaps even employees? Today, our computer systems are massive, and you know, we're living in this wonderful age of information technology, and we need to use this. We need to use it, you know, continuously, actively, productively, constructively, not only for just WhatsApp, you know, laugh out loud all the time, you know, that we must, look at these things. So it's on those grounds that I'm raising it. Then, of course, we need to come to the important and the gist of where the red brigade comes from. And, of course, the reason I raise the lighter issue is so that I have the attention. satisfaction of everyone, because the government in waiting kind of thing, you know. And the socio-economic differences within our economies, even
I just want to point this out. I know Honorable Bauda has not been well for a long time, and he is back. Honorable Bauda, we know psychiatric facilities not far from here if you need some, but because he's really talking about things of currency right now, which I don't
know. Honorable Bauda, continue. Okay, let's come to the information, the socio-economic discrepancies in our economy. I look even at the vision of the department. I don't see anything, and I don't see anything also in the presentation. You're talking about socio-economic justice within our labor laws, within the how we monitor labor in the country to support the great numbers of our people that are, you know, providing their services as labor. I know that there is this, you know, we speak often about investment and the competition with the outside world and the fact that there is cheaper labor outside, etc. I don't, you know, we don't really buy the story, Mr. D. You know, to us, we are quite clear that investment in this country, I mean, take Germany and Canada. These companies have full investments. If I ask any businessman to invest in Germany, they definitely go and invest in Germany, even though labor is at a price. But the reason they will invest there is because the society is stable, the economy is stable, socio-economic systems are stable. Now what we are having in South Africa, because of this huge discrepancy, we're having the civil disobedience, we're having these disturbances within society. And because of this, people will become reluctant to invest in the country. Socio-economic stability invites investment. Add to that the fact that we have resources in the country, tremendous resources, waiting to be exploited. These are recipes to invite investment. And when we have this other share, then we will be inviting to find that investment will come and we will be able to create employment as well. The issue that also, you know, when we look at South Africa, we are sitting through economies. When we look at the informal economy, the economy in the poor section of our community, a lot of this, the employment here is in the informal sector. Now, when we provide figures with regard to employment, how are we looking at these? What are we doing to ensure that we have a more a database of information that is more relevant to us, that includes the informal sector? We need to be, as the informal sector grows, and we are all in agreement that the informal sector needs to grow, then we need to bring this on board in some way so that it assists us in our planning going ahead. Finally, this issue of global high health scheme, it's also related to what is happening in the outside economies. Now, we are of the firm belief that in South Africa we have 50 million people. Unfortunately, 80% of our population do not have buying power. The reason for this is because we are paying people minimum salaries. Let us within the country raise salaries. What is your department doing to ensure that we encourage government to implement the minimum salary as soon as possible, or a minimum which will create a market within the country? And then what happens is our economy becomes less dependent on the economies outside. In fact, we should already, Honorable Chair, start introducing into the vocabulary maximum salaries. And I'm not going to say that we will start with. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. If you will allow me to just make an introductory comment first, to firstly welcome the presentation, DG, and your team. There are so many questions that I'll take some more up with my with the leader there from the chair. We'll talk about some of the specifics. My second comment would be, Chair, then in slide 41, when you refer to the labour market trends, you don't have to go there, DG.
I want to, on behalf of all of us, make the appeal that you make these reports available to us. It is very helpful for our own analysis when we have, I know you're referring to the trends, and then there's another document that you're working on there as well. We would welcome receiving that. My third one would just be to say, on the UIF, it's very important. If I do not raise questions on it, it's because I know we are engaging with you soon. It's next week. So we'll take up the UIF issues there. Then my first question would be a generic one that relates to slide 13, where you talk about the protection of workers. Now, on the protection of workers, I specifically want to take up two categories of workers. The one is what Sato has consistently referred to as a casualization of labor. Now, I know that there are big, let me call them supermarkets. I won't mention their names here, but I'll give them to you, that are finding creative ways of using employment agencies to get staff to do services in these supermarkets rather than the supermarket employing them. And I have one such contract where when you look at the contract, there is very little in it in terms of protection. And it keeps on happening. The second category that I want to mention is that we know in the capitalist system that normally the weakest are the first to feel the adverse consequences of our economic situation. And while we commend you for the work that you're doing in sheltered employment, we are saying that as a nation, this is not that we can do. And we would want to cooperate with you in terms of ensuring that more of our disabled people. In my constituency, in Coronationville, in Johannesburg, there was a school for the blind. The school is shut. It created employment for about 150 people, but they've just taken it over. I'm not blaming them, I'm blaming the economic situation of that. That's my first question. My second one would be on page 40, when you talk about the unprotected strikes. Is it not a problem that we find that more of our workers are ununionized? And we also have these tensions within the organized trade union movements. If we look at we look at the municipal workers in the city of Johannesburg, we look at UNCU and the problems that they're having with Lily Mine as well. And what is happening is that more of the workers are saying, no, there's no benefit for us to belong to a trade union movement and therefore keep out of it. And we know about the importance of having an organized workforce and how that contributes towards the stability. And what is now happening is that our workers are unorganized and that contributes to the strike activity not being properly managed. My next question would be on page 24, where you refer to the employment equity. Now, you are there saying that your target is 808. I want to assert that that target is low. And may I ask the NDG, can you help us? I know you said you don't have enough money, but can you respond to a criticism that says the target is low? The next one would be on page 33, where you talk about 1.4, you talk about counseling. Now, you're talking about counseling 150. That's also low, 150,000. Can I get an indication from your DG? I know you've not started the counseling in 2016-17. from the counseling that you have done, through you that I know you, we might rule that we may wait for the report on the annual performance. But can we just get an indication as we assess the realism of your budget? If you talk about 150,000, how many in previous years of the potential workers that have gone through counseling, you can just give us a percentage, did you, has actually secured employment? Chair, my ultimate question will be on page 44, but I think Honourable Faber has touched on that one. To just support it, that I find it strange that if you talk about the number of registered voters, the annual target being 150,000 and 1.4, and 1.5, you're then talking about the opportunities for it only being 8,000. That's very low. And then you, then in 1.6, then talk about the number of work opportunities registered on ISA is 60,000. That's still only 50% of the 160,000. Now, we could be reading the wrong Gigi, but just help us understand it. My final point then, Chair, would be on page 58, where you refer to the compensation fund. Now, I would have wished that we can have, as we're having a separate discussion on UIF, we could have a separate one on the compensation fund. But seeing that it's not on our schedule, you're talking there, DG, under 1.6, about 19 fundings cleared by 30th of June 2016. That's around the corner. And then you're talking about 19 for 30th of December and 19 for 31st of December. Can you maybe just refer us to three of these findings? Because someone has raised the question earlier on and you've adequately responded to the fact that you have an unqualified audit. Then you are mentioning the findings here. When you mentioned the unqualified audit, you referred to one of the findings there, which is data. What are the other? Because we are not, Chair, through you, Chair, we not only received a separate report from the compensation fund before we debate this budget. I just thought it would help me if I have maybe two or three of the findings clarified for me. That would be my question, thank you, Chair.
You know, Max had problems with his hierarchy. He said his own design has got a class connotation. Very slow. That's why he always fought against this. He always fought for a better society. But I have been covered by Honourable Makwe, Chair. My last request is that if we can have contact, especially I need a contact of your aid in the Bumalanga province, whatever you call it. If we can transform them to be that we can have an open line, because a lot of labor issues are dumped in our constituency offices and we don't know who to talk to. We can't be expecting to be talking to you, all of us. Thanks, Josie.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also appreciate the report from the Department of Health. Chair, mine is on 2.6, the number of employer payroll audits collected. What I'd like to know, Chair, does this include workers from the farm and also workers, domestic workers, because those are very difficult areas. And I'd also like to know the system as they do the department to do the audit. Thank you.
These are three questions from my part, or maybe two. Slide 20. What is the level of your status of now of your vacancy rate? The target is to achieve 9.9 over a period of time. What is the status now? Back to slide 14. The bottom part. Strategy to improve collective bargaining submitted to cabinet. Can I submit that we also in the near future have time to have a view of this strategy? Slide 13. Look, part of the inherent responsibility of the department that you're leading is the observance and the maintenance of industrial peace. But you also have a responsibility to monitor a trend. We know already what has happened. I'm from the Northwest. What has happened in the Platinum Belt? This is a negotiation period again, once more. We know the ramification of the disturbance of industrial peace that are coming there. What is the status of readiness from your part as the department? Because this thing is important, DJ, because you know that in the past, this disturbance of industrial peace has led to that part of employment in the sector. In fact, if you go to your regional office in Brandenburg now, you would find the longest queue ever. Jobs have been shed in the industry, particularly in the mining sector. But because mining sector is dominant in your platinum belt, when there's disturbance of industrial peace, it does not only affect the mining sector, it disturbs everybody. And the department should be able to be proactive and say, what is it that we can be able to do? And I found it to be silent in this case. I know that the intention was to get us the broader view, but you can take and move on it. We participate in that because we should be out of here. So like the commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you, sir. The commissioner will let the commissioner give me the use of the compensation.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue on the chronic medication, we just noted the question that from Gideon was just exercised that question when we roll out the program. The question on the audit issues, the compensation fund is audited separately from the Department of Labor. That's why the DG was saying the department has engaged in a clean audit for the last 3 years. So with regard to the compensation fund, our audit hasn't been as good as the department or the UIF. And you requested an example of what are these, some of these findings that we have in the report. One, for example, the AG has raised his concern around the inadequate records that we keep to support the information that we disclose in the financial statement. There's been issues raised by the AG also on the completeness and accuracy of the revenue that the fund reports. And also there's been issues around compliance to SCM rules and regulations that have been raised by the AG.
Just to add to what the commissioner is saying, Chair, we have put together an action plan to address the challenges at the compensation fund, and we will make that action plan available to the committee as well. With regards to the ICT systems and whether we keep the database of employers, yes, we do. We actually have a credible database that the Unemployment Insurance Fund keeps and which uses to that extent in their support as well. So we do that. And also the Compensation Fund as well, we keep a database which is accessible to all the Department of Labor functionaries. The issue of the socio-economic differences, that the presentation doesn't talk about the socio-economic issues. If you look at the strength, if you look at the vision of the Department of Labor is to create an environment where there's investment, conducive environment for investment, economic growth, employment, also decent work. Now, this is translated through the number of policies that we have enacted and that the country has enacted that we are enforcing as a Department of Labor. So let me say, for instance, that we want to create an environment where there is labor peace in the country. Investment in this country is largely driven by the investor sentiments. So if the perception of the investor, is just that, if they say that the country is not doing well, the climate for investment is not well in the country, that is going to have an impact in the growth, economic growth, and also down the line in the whole, in terms of into the entire value chain, the workers are going to be affected, because in order for us to create jobs, we need investment. Whether it's domestic kind of investment or external investment from other countries, it's foreign investment, it's immaterial, but we need to invest in our economy to create jobs. Now, if you have labor instability, you're not helping your country. That's why in our message to both employers and organized labor is that let's think about the country, not about our own selfish interests. I'll give you an example. We produced an industrial action report. In that industrial action report, we found that there are instances where workers went on strike because when they placed their demands in front of the employer, the employer says, no, if they say for instance 10%, the employer says, no, you can go and go on strike. So they go on strike, they come back. They then settle on 6%. And also the instances where workers went on strike demanding 6%, and they came back, they settled 8%. So if the employer was prepared to settle at 8%, why allow workers to go on strike? If the union was prepared to settle at a percentage lower than what they demanded, why go on strike? So this requires some degree of maturity on both sides. So what we're doing as a department through the CMA, which goes back to the point that the chairperson raised in terms of what the state of our readiness to deal with these issues, the CMA has been very proactive. They especially in the mining industry, they are running a pilot now where they work with the companies on dispute prevention. Where, for instance, we're heading towards the negotiation period. So CMA goes in and they say, well, what could be the issues? And they deal with those issues prior to the negotiations that are taking place. So that's the kind of the programs that we've implemented to make sure that we reduce the number of unprotected strikes. But you also raise a very important point about the union density, which is very low. Now, the labor relations in this act is founded on two principles. One, the ability of the state to set minimum wages, the floor. And secondly, your strong collective bargaining system. So if the collective bargaining system is weak, there's nothing that the state can do, because the state sets the floor of the of rights in the country. So if unions are weak, collective bargaining is going to crash. So that's the challenge that we're sitting with. And we think that if collective bargaining collapses, that would place a huge burden on the Department of Labor. One, the limited resources that we have to go out and monitor these companies and make sure that they comply with the law is going to be a huge challenge for the department. Because currently, we're finding it very difficult to go to other workplaces, and we've accepted that. We say we're not going to be everywhere, but we rely on unions and employers to do the right thing in terms of complying with the law. So yes, the issue of union density is becoming a problem. In fact, even yesterday we had a meeting with the family councils trying to look at the at this issue, what is it that we can do. So whenever we have an opportunity, we indicate the fact that South Africa is ready for investment. The story that our labor market policies are inflexible is a very subjective opinion, because we can prove how flexible our laws are, and we have a system where you can talk to your employees and then you apply for variations. So these are the things that we need to be indicating to the investors so that they have a much more better understanding of our legislation. Well, the issue of the minimum wage. There are discussions at NEDLAC. Social partners have agreed on the principle of a national minimum wage. They have agreed in terms of all other issues related to who the minimum wage will cover, but they are now working on the figures. And
in the discussions that are taking place, we need to, all parties have to tread cautiously. One, you don't want the minimum wage to be, to affect SMEs in a negative way. Their ability to create employment and also their ability to survive after you have introduced the national minimum. So that's the first consideration. The second consideration is that you don't want to set the national minimum wage so low to a point that it doesn't achieve what it is intended to achieve, to alleviate poverty and also reduce the income inequality that the country is experiencing. So those are the two fundamental, and the third one is that you don't want to set the minimum wage too high to an extent that it kills collective bargaining. Because the collective bargaining system is there to see to it that the parties can bargain for a better wage other than that which is prescribed by the state. So if you set it too high, what will be the role of union and collective bargaining there? So those are the three fundamental things that we want to make sure that we achieve through this process. And that's why it's a protracted engagement that is taking place because we're mindful of the economic issues left. We will make the report, honorable member, available to the committee. Given the report I referred to of the industrial action report, we will also make it available to the committee members. Well, the issue of mobilization of labor continues to be a huge challenge. In fact, we are now commissioning a study to look at the impact of the amendment, whether indeed they've yielded positive results and has there been a change in the employment relations between employers who are provided for by the labor broker, versus the employers that are employed by the client. Is there a difference in terms of the employment conditions and also the salary level? I know that there's a study that Labor Case has done, which says that the labor relations have impacted negatively on employment, which it has resulted in an increase in unemployment in certain sectors. But we are of the view that when they did the study, it was too late, because it was just after we introduced the new amendment. So we think that this is the right time now that we jointly do a study which is to be done by the Department of Labor in collaboration with the social partners at NEDLIC. With regards to the vulnerable workers and the fact that there's more that can do, we agree. We even agreed that SEF should open factories in other provinces, especially once they become sustainable. Currently, they are largely dependent on the grant that we give them as a Department of Labor. So we're trying to help them to run these factories more like businesses, so that they are not dependent on the Department of Labor. That's why we've set them a huge target with regards to the profits that they make. We want to see that they generate a profit, and they are beginning to do so, and they're getting orders from other government departments, Department of Education, for furniture. And interestingly, this service has an ability to manufacture good quality furniture. Some of the furniture stores that we buy furniture from, we buy from SEF, and we buy from these furniture at a premium. So the quality of their product is good. I think I've dealt with the issue of unprotected strike and the impact that they have in the economy. The EE target, I agree with you, Honourable Member, that the target is low. But the reality is that if we set a high target and we don't achieve it, given the current resources that we have, we will not be honest with ourselves. We'll be setting a target just to please the Honourable Member. And I don't think that this should be the intention of the exercise. Target setting has to take into account the available resources, and that's what we have done as a,
and as a department, but we also make room for requests that we'll get or beyond the target that we set. We also get requests, and that's why in certain instances we feel that we overachieve the target because of the request that we have received. I also agree with the accounting, 150,000 is low. If you compare the fact that 5.7 million people in this country are unemployed, 150 is a small fraction of that number. But again, it has to do with the capacity that we have at the department and the resources that we have at our disposal. We will make this report or the information available, honorable members, with regards to how many in previous year of those that were cancelled found employment. We'll make that report available. The issue of job opportunities, placement and work seekers registered continues to be a problem. It will continue to be a problem because I think at the back of our minds is the fact that you have huge unemployment in the country. And when you have, just an example, if you have 150,000 that you've registered in your system as job seekers, the expectation is that 150,000 should find employment. But that's the function of, or that is dependent on the number of vacancies or job opportunities that you have. So if you have job opportunities that are about 4,000, and you place 4,000, I think that you would have achieved a lot. Because it depends on the number of opportunities that that you have. So it will always going to be an issue, because we all want to make sure that we place more than, that we place the number of people that we have on our database. So I don't have a clear answer on what your expectations, honorable member. I think the commissioner has responded on the AG. We'll make available the contacts of the provincial head immediately when we finish here. The number of payroll auditors, the commissioner will respond in terms of the systems that he used. But the work, our work, whenever we do inspections, it includes domestic workers. It includes farm workers as well. So when we go and a payroll auditor go and audit companies, we want to see the employment register. In most instances, we don't use the KPS system. We just need to get a register and go through the register and see that whether the employer is actually paying that which he or she has declared to the unemployment insurance fund or to the compensation fund. Because in instances, they declare that they have two employees, but in actual fact they have 10. And interestingly, they will declare more to UIF than to the compensation funds, because UIF is 1% from an employer and 1% from an employee. The compensation fund is 2% from the employer, and it's based on it's a risk-based kind of an assessment that is done, and the contribution is based on that. Well, the DGT Corporate Services, the vacancy currently I think is at 11%. It's at 11% currently. The strategy to improve collective bargaining will also submit it to the committee. We'll give you a copy. And this will be the product of the discussions that are taking place at NEGLEC. So we'll give that to you as well. I think I've dealt with the state of readiness in dealing with the disability in the later development. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, this junior team. We want to appreciate you taking time to be here. We appreciate much when you have the team that is having answers on the tips of their fingers, so that they don't struggle in getting answers they are going to satisfy members' questions. I think we should applaud that. In relation to what Marable learned and other members raised earlier, it's not the first time that they are raising issues about the presence of the political leadership in meetings of this select committee. I think I'll take it up now. I got the information Honorable Lodge and the commitment that the minister was available to come, but because of reasons beyond the communication was sent to me that she's not going to be here, but the deputy minister will definitely be part. So I think that commitment should be followed up, and we should be able to raise it with them so that we then hold them accountable to the commitment that I was given as the chair of the SLA committee. And I think I'll follow that up and make sure that issues are resolved. I think, DG, on your part, the reason why I'm responding to this thing is we don't want to create a situation where we want to send you to your boss too. So I think I would leave it with the relevant for the chief so that we can find a bigger position. Another part?
Chairperson, I don't know if I just want to ask for this department, but there's others that's also... I want to get us a record, and it should be easy to see how many select committee meetings we've had with Labour since we got elected, and how many were actually attended by the minister and or the deputy minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you were supposed to give an apology before we can ask that type of question. If we did have that apology, then I was not going to give an honorable round.
No, I gave it. You came just after I explained the logic that, in fact, the deputy minister, the report that was given this morning, that the lights are delayed in certain, he could not be here. So that's why I'm saying I will take it up and see how to do it. DJ, just because you took some of our few minutes, please don't disrupt members now. We're just dealing with two issues that will be out here. And our members, we have the minutes. You have minutes before you have the dated the 12th April. And members who are present there, the Honorable Magu and Honorable Dutali and Honorable Fab, the minutes were sent to you. Are there any issues that you want to raise that probably indicates to be corrected? Is there anything that we can... Honorable Magu?
This is a very, very minor one. Under paragraph 2, summary of the proceedings, the second sentence there starts with, in a nutshell, just to put between objective, the sentence you read, in a nutshell, the Democratic Alliance objected to, T-O, then I'm happy, sir.
Are you comfortable with it? Can you accept the more than necessary change?
I would so propose,
Chair. I would call it. Agreed. You must be on record.
I am agreeing.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Can we go to the minutes sent to us also? What is the date? 11th of May. They are before you, Honourable Members. No? Honorable Magwe, you're confusing me. I was referring to the minutes of the 12th of April.
Chairman, amendment was to the minutes of the 11th of May.
Can we go back to the 12th of April? Are there any issues of the 12th of April that you want to raise? Unfortunately, we rely on your wisdom and honor of the Kali.
Just one of your trustees, that Chairperson, who is always attending your committee. I propose that we move the minutes for adoption.
We have a proposal, Honorable Mabia. Do you have any specific view of that?
You trust your teacher.
Thank you so much. Can we then proceed? You've already made a proposal for amendment on the second part of the summary of proceedings. Any other honorable note?
Okay, under opening and welcome, it wasn't a unanimous agreement that it needs to be discussed the next day. I need to put it on the table. Unanimous means every single person. So you can say a majority agreement to discuss it the next day. That's the first amendment. I don't know if I want to first comment on that or can I switch? J
Chair, and then also I'm just trying to see where I did put it on record. Yeah, you've got it that the West Cape voted against and not all the amendments was put in.
Two issues, sorry, the Honourable Lord. That one, it's issues of, I think, semantics, unanimous and majority. Please speak on it and speak on, I think the other issue is comfortable.
I think the Secretary captured it correct when she says unanimous, because then there was no objection raised in the meeting on it. However, Chair, I would think that the spirit of the meeting is correctly captured when we say the charter and therefore accept that amendment, Chair. I want to support the amendment from Honourable Lord.
Chairperson, I would just like to find out, is this specifically when the bill was just read out, or was this in the beginning of the meeting as well? Because I specifically said that my province, which is the Northern Cape, that it was going to go back to them for discussion, and it did not go back to them. So I felt that my province did not get the time to respond, as it was not said to the previous minutes, was not said to them, and it does not reflect in this minute, and I want to be noted in this minute that it was not sent to my province. And I will discuss it with my province. I thought it was even going to go to the provincial delegation eventually, which was also actually going to be wrong because it should have gone back to the province. Now, my question is, it is not standing under the summary of proceedings, and I want it to be noted there. Thank you, Chair.
I wish everybody would understand my language so that I can put it clearly in my own baby language. I'm not talking about the final mandate of the bill. So the person the member council submitted the final mandate, and the final mandate was saying they are agreeing to the bill. So I don't think this is necessary.
Before you respond, Honourable Father, let me take you back to the proceedings of the same meeting. You raised it in the same meeting, yet the response was given to you. Then in the minutes that we sent after the deliberation of the negotiating mandate, under Northern Cape it was captured very explicitly that the issues by and large raised through the recommendation by the provincial legislation through the negotiating mandate of the Northern Cape, they by and large captured in the spirit and the intent of the draft bill. However, except as executed, except and that block of the where we needed clarity was highlighted and sent back to them. And the assurance that I gave in the meeting was that it was the responsibility of the province to then come back to us and say, we insist that we want to clarify this matter further, or this is what we take. And that was not done. So we cannot go back to the issue that was raised and want to elevate issues that were not getting sufficient or adequate support in the meeting for them to be appearing in the minutes. Thank you. Can you come back?
Yes, Chair. That's exactly my point, Chair. The minutes did not reflect that. So the province could not, my province, the Northern Cape province, could not get back to you because it was not reflecting in those minutes. And this was my whole issue. So do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? If the minutes reflected that, they could respond, but the province could not respond if they did not get the correct minutes.
I'll come back and clarify if that's not wrong.
We've discussed the matter. Can I propose that we deal with the minutes? I propose to accept it as it is with the two changes, Chair, which is the one that we change unanimous to be reading majority, and then we head to that phrase where Honourable Fundanen is mentioned. I so propose, Chair.
Honourable Kale. Any other decisions, you? No, Honourable Father, we will not note that because the issue that you are raising and you are persisting for raising is neither here nor there. It's not, it does not exist. Can we agree that the minutes are supported and agree to them that the necessary amendments that are affected? Thank you, Honourable Members. We we came to the conclusion of forming the DG and your team. Thank you very much. I think we will also raise the DG for what Honorable Faber raised earlier, which means you are empowered because you sit in the subcommittee that needs to make sure that Parliament zoom into the information and technology kind of environment. And we would want to look into the presence of the political leadership that are we using technology to also empower us moving into the future. Thank you so much to your team. Thank you. Oh, Honorable Members, before you leave, Honorable Roger, there's an ILO invite that we took also time to round off members who are available. We know also members who are not available, and we are going to process it. We spoke to the other members whether they are going to be attending or not, and we are going to be processing it as per the agreement of the round. Agreed. Thank you.
Chair, how are you going? I want to know whether what your constituency is. If the EFF take over your constituency, I'm going to remind you that you left them in the boat.